From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1974 when a young woman named Lori Thomas received her diploma from James Madison High School. Her path was not the typical one. She had attended a private Catholic school from kindergarten through eighth grade, then went to a public high school, left in the 10th grade. But Lori saw a significant difference between the two school systems. She saw larger class sizes, less accountability in public schools, less structure and discipline, less success, but she wanted to finish, and it had planted kind of a seed for her. At the age of 36, Lori went back and got her teaching degree, and her work as a teacher has informed some of her most recent work. Lori Thomas is running for mayor of Rochester, although she says she is not beholden to any single party and wants to move beyond the power of party politics. Over the years, you might have heard her name in the news at various points. Yes, she was suspended in 2004 for washing a student's mouth out with soap. She was removed as a fifth grade teacher in 2010 after tethering herself to the city school district's office with a protest sign for about 6 hours on Christmas Day. But Lori Thomas is about more than just those headlines. She is serious about this mayoral run. She's got a detailed plan for how to run City Hall, and she is our guest this hour on Connections. Welcome to the program, Lori.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Thank you for having me.
Well, let me just start with some of what you told my colleague Helen Biandutti-Hofer on Need to Know Rochester. You said that the Democrats control the poverty in the city and the Republicans control the wealth in the suburbs. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is there is money to be made in poverty. And when you have a system of government that gets federal aid for the poverty that they create and promulgate in the city, that's what happens. And when we have the wealth in the suburbs voting and paying for not-for-profits, that sort of thing, we have a situation where we have to maintain poverty within a certain area so that we can promote middle-class income in other areas.
Now, we're going to talk, I'm sure, a lot more about the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative and your views on how to alleviate poverty. But the implication here is that political leaders, like one of your opponents, Mayor Lovely Warren, are not that concerned, or the status quo benefits people in politics, even if it leaves people in poverty. Do you feel that way?
I'm not sure that it's done purposefully, but what I believe is that when we have elected officials that are trying to promote affordable housing instead of home ownership, then that supports the poverty, because we all know that home ownership will bring people out of poverty. There are several situations that can be changed to help people come out of the poverty that they're in, such as supporting them even though they get a job. Once people get a job, they're cut, their services are cut, they can't afford daycare, and they end up going right back on social services again. We can change that system.
Now, when you say that home ownership is what helps pull people out of poverty, mm-hmm. could you also argue that the overabundance of home ownership that came with easy credit and sort of the situation, especially in the aughts, that led to the financial crisis and the housing collapse, does it put people in a bad position if you put them in housing that they can't afford, that ultimately they get in trouble?
Well, that's just it. When people purchase housing that they can't afford, it leads to problems. The housing that I'm suggesting is affordable housing that people own, not that people rent and pay to corporations that already exist, that are already making money, but affordable housing that they work with Habitat for Humanity to create on empty lots that already exist within the city, and then giving them tax breaks and not large corporations.
All right, we're going to get back to that in a second, but let's peel it back to your childhood. Lori, you called yourself a country girl?
I am. I'm a country girl. I was born in Batavia, New York, actually.
And how long did you spend in Batavia?
My mom moved us to Rochester when I was 4 years old.
4 years old, okay. Mm-hmm. Any memory of Batavia?
I love the country. Yes, animals.
And you still love the country?
Still love the country. Wouldn't live there necessarily right now, but love going out there and just relaxing.
And you ended up going K through 8 in private school and then made the transition. And everything I've read about your experience was that even as a girl, growing into your adulthood, you could see that the difference bothered you. Yes.
Yes. There was a distinct racism that I really didn't encounter until I got to public school. At that time, busing had just started, and individuals were being bused in from suburbs to go to Madison, and there were fights, and there was just a lot of dissension and hatred that I didn't grow up with, because I was taught to love everyone. and that everyone is important, everyone has a purpose. And so when I saw this, I just couldn't rectify it. And it started coming against me, and as I was explaining earlier, I ended up quitting school in the 10th grade.
Why did you specifically decide to quit at that point?
Simply because of the hatred that I had to deal with every day in going to school.
And I don't want to dredge up too many tough memories, but can you give me some examples of what you were going through, Lori?
Well, I was not liked by African Americans. I was not liked by my teachers. I was not liked by...
Why?
I think... Well, I was not liked because I came from that private school setting, and so my education was further along than the other individuals. I used to get beaten up and made to do other people's homework, and that was not necessary to me. And when I saw other people being beaten up simply because they were Caucasian, it just didn't make sense to me. And so, once again, the hatred that I experienced in that public school setting, I couldn't take it. So I just ended up quitting. I only needed 2 credits, a math credit and an English credit, and I convinced the superintendent then, which was Superintendent Franco, to allow me to go to Monroe Community College for those 2 credits and then be able to get my degree from Madison.
And so you got your degree, but what you had seen, not just in terms of, as you say, racism or hatred, but also you saw class sizes, you saw inequality in the system?
Absolutely. There were individuals, I mean, we were stuffed into classes. People that didn't even have desks, that were just sitting in chairs or just standing, trying to learn, I guess, and not being taught.
And even at that young age, you could start to pick up on the idea that, well, I came from a private school setting. Did it feel unfair to you? Did it feel? Yeah, I'm wondering at what point some of your ideas about what should change in the school system started to happen. I mean, I don't know if it happened at that young age. Maybe you're just observing the problems. But you know, did you eventually come around to thinking there needs to be more funding, or poverty is the issue, or whatever the issue is? How did you start developing those ideas?
Well, I just not until later on, and when I became a teacher, I always kind of questioned the system, but I put my children in private school. They went to Catholic school as well.
Okay.
Because of all the horrible things I was told when I was in Catholic school about public school, and then what I experienced when I went to public school. So I really didn't experience the full genre until I became a teacher. And once I did become a teacher and became ensconced in this system that I truly believe is not meant to educate our children, not just inner city children, but all children.
You think it's not meant to educate them?
I don't believe so, no. I believe...
What's it meant to do?
I believe it's meant to create a society of worker bees that don't question what they're told to do, they just do it. And that's not what we as human beings are put here on earth to do. I think we should question everything. I wasn't allowed to question anything in public school. I was made to question in private school, but I wasn't allowed to question in public school.
Interesting. Talking to Lori Thomas, who's running for mayor of Rochester. She's got a website if you want to check it out. She's got like 4 websites, but the website for mayor is thomas4mayor.wordpress.com. thomas4mayor.wordpress.com. Okay, so in the intervening years, after you got your high school diploma and then at the age of 36 going back to get a teaching degree, what did you do essentially in the intervening years?
I collected refuse for the city, and that was my dream job.
Why was it a dream job?
I was outside. I didn't have anyone over top of me telling me what to do. It was a treasure hunt every single day, and I got to drive a truck, and that's what I love to do.
You know? And you decided in your mid-30s to go get a teaching degree. Why did you want to do that?
I didn't want to. I was hurt at work, and so I took advantage of a program that sent me back to school, and my original intent was to become a supervisor in the department, but God led me to teaching, even though I didn't want to do that. I didn't have any desire to be a teacher whatsoever, but that's where my heart led me.
Okay, and you went to Nazareth?
Nazareth College, yes.
Okay, and so you get certified, and then How quickly did you find work, and take me through your work path?
Well, my last year in college, as in my bachelor's degree, I received a contract from the city school district. I was doing substitute work throughout that year, and a principal, Sue Kaufman at number 22 school, appreciated the way I taught and asked me if I wanted a full-time job, and I told her yes, and it was from there on I worked as a teacher.
What were some of your first observations, especially because I know you had your own experience to draw on that was so negative? Were you hoping to find a lot of change? You know, what were you finding at that time?
I was hoping that education would be what it was when I was learning to be a teacher, learning to become an educator. At Nazareth, I was trained in the Montessori method, which was ask questions, explore, examine, that type of thing. But when I got into the school system, I realized that it was totally different, that it was me standing in front of a classroom, giving information, and the children taking that information and then regurgitating it. And that, to me, isn't learning. I wanted to have a more experiential type of education for my students.
It sounds to me like you think what's happening in American classrooms is either outdated or intentionally, you know, sort of not ideal for actual learning. Is it more outdated, or are we setting it up this way, as you say, to kind of create the society of worker bees?
It's outdated, and it was set up that way.
It's both of those things?
It's both of those things. I don't know if you remember, but I think it was either late 70s or early 80s, corporations were brought into the school district, and they told the school system at the federal level, we're having a lot of problems keeping employees in line. We need to teach our employees how to teach our students how to be better employees. And that changed the face of education, as far as I'm concerned and understand. It changed the face of education from growing individuals who are critical thinkers to growing individuals who don't ask questions, just do what they're told.
There's the most watched TED Talk of all time is Sir Ken Robinson, who's a British educational consultant on how schools kill creativity. It really is worth watching, if just for the Shakespeare joke alone. But the whole thing is fabulous. And one of the things that Ken Robinson has said over the years is, if you were designing an educational setting, a classroom, from scratch today, and there's nothing to draw on, it would not look the way we set it up, with a teacher standing in the front, a bunch of desks in rows, students largely tied to them, and that there would be so much that would change. If you were designing classrooms from scratch now, what would they look like, Lori?
First of all, they wouldn't have any desks.
No desks.
That was the first thing I wanted to get rid of my first year of teaching.
Did they let you?
No.
Okay.
But it ended up, it was interesting, because what we used our desks for was to create a zoo. I took my students to the Seneca Park Zoo, and none of them could read. It was a classroom of 36 second graders, none of whom could read.
None, wow.
And we went to the Seneca Park Zoo, and they took pictures of the animals. And when we got back, I said, how would you like to make our own zoo? And that's kind of what we did. And the whole classroom became this zoo, and they became junior zoologists. And at the end of the year, about 85% of my students could read at a very good level.
Wow. Talking to Lori Thomas about her work that has led up to this run for mayor of Rochester. And so, yeah, you had a few incidents over the years that, that got into the news. Did you know, the big ones that people may remember is, first of all, 2004, you washed a 10-year-old's mouth out with soap?
Third grade, I believe.
Yeah, okay, something like
that. Yes, something like that.
Why did you decide to do that?
There were very interesting circumstances with this child. He was a child of five. Mom and dad had lost custody of them, and I won't say why. In Florida, they were brought up here to stay with their only relative up here. They were given no counseling services whatsoever, and in the Joseph Avenue area at that time, young children were being used to carry drugs for drug dealers because they couldn't be arrested. And they would give these children $20, $30 to do so, and this was one of the children that did that. And so he would constantly do and say things to get suspended from school so that he could go out and work and get for the drug dealers.
And you knew this was happening?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And He tried that with me. They put him as a last resort. They put him in my classroom, and he tried that with me, and I said, no. I said, what's going to happen is you're going to get your mouth washed out, and I don't want to hear that filth come out your mouth again.
But we're not going to suspend you.
I'm not going to suspend you. And then I showed him all the wonderful work that he did while he was in my classroom.
Wow. And so you actually washed his mouth out with soap?
In the nurse's office, yes. It wasn't a dangerous situation whatsoever.
Was the response to that disproportionate? Was it silly? Was the public response to it silly?
No, actually, the public was very supportive.
Okay.
It was the district response that was silly.
What did they tell you?
They said it was child abuse.
Child abuse?
Yes.
They actually used that term?
Yes.
Child abuse to wash a child's mouth out with soap, which is sort of old school, right? I mean,
yes.
You hear that as kind of an old school thing. I don't hear people actually doing it anymore.
Well, it happened to me quite a few times.
Okay. but interesting, the backstory that maybe was less reported was why you did it.
Exactly.
You knew this child.
Yes.
You didn't want this child on the street running drugs.
Exactly.
And in your view, did it work?
No. Simply because that same day I was marched out and that child was empowered to continue to do what he was doing.
And eventually probably suspended.
I don't know.
Okay.
They were taken out of the school and by the time I returned.
So the reason I'm kind of focusing on the incident is sometimes what happens is the headline goes out.
Yes.
And you get people saying, well, good, wash kids' mouth out with soap. We need better discipline. Or other people say, that's child abuse, as opposed to saying, what's the actual story here?
Exactly.
What happened here? This was a teacher who knew a student and wanted to do something to make sure that student was protected. In general, that's one incident. But do you think the district does not do a good job recognizing teachers who are trying to get to know students and looking for creative ways to help them? I mean, how do you feel the relationship the district has with teachers is?
I'm not going to comment on that because that goes beyond my particular purview. I only know how they dealt with me.
Okay.
Okay, but I would like to say that because of that incident and because I went out on the picket line, that I brought attention to the fact that the district was suspending 3,000 elementary school children long term every year, and that changed. And so I feel that what happened to me was worthwhile because they changed their way of dealing with elementary school children instead of suspending them, finding other ways to help them.
This related to the Christmas Day protest?
That was a whole different issue.
That's what I thought. That was 2010, I think.
Yes.
Christmas Day. You tethered yourself to the district office.
And hung a sign that said, suffer not the little children.
Suffer not the little children. What was that about?
That was about the incoming Common Core curriculum and the fact that Rochester City School District classifies 17% more students than the rest of the districts in the state as being disabled. And that's because more money is given to the state and to the local education agencies for classified students than for non-classified students.
And what should change there?
What I'd like to see is that we educate every child according to their gifts and talents. Every child is gifted and talented. But as soon as a child enters the school system, they're told that they're either normal or disabled. And that's the most horrendous thing we can do to any child. Because the child that's told they're normal gets an attitude that they're better than other children. And the children that they're told they're disabled get the attitude and feeling that they're not as good. And that's just not true, and that's not how I feel about it.
How did you feel about the response to that protest?
There was no response to it other than me the district had a mental hygiene arrest placed on me, at which time I was supposed to spend 48 hours at Strong Psych, and I was released after 8 hours because they said, there's nothing wrong with you. I know that.
But was that a case where you felt that the district was missing the point or responding inappropriately?
They were not trying to see. You have to understand, I have a very strong relationship with the district of rebellion, and I was constantly going to school district meetings and reporting events, and they just felt as though they needed to quiet me, and I won't be quieted.
And so let me just back up also on the work that you did trying to get suspensions limited. Speaking generally, too many kids being suspended?
Mm-hmm.
Is it easier just to suspend kids?
Certainly. Certainly. Than to find out what is wrong. There's too many children. There are not enough services at the elementary level. We have services, counseling services at the secondary level, but we have very few. I'm not sure right now, but at that time we had very few counseling services at the elementary level. It's just like these children come in and everything is hunky-dory, but they don't understand that the problems that they see at the secondary level begin at that elementary level that no one is addressing.
And so this is where I think there's a really interesting aspect of Lori's career, because when you read her bio, you read about this student who went from K through 8 private school, private Catholic education, mm-hmm. going into Rochester Public Schools and feeling like, number one, it was unfairly unequal, that their class sizes were larger, that there was less structure, less discipline, less success. Then you read in her teaching career, she washes a student's mouth out with soap, makes some headlines, and some people might assume, oh, this is a disciplinarian. This is someone who wants to crack down and would not be in the restorative justice model. Instead, you know, what you're talking about is, yes, discipline, but the right kind of discipline that understands the needs of kids, as opposed to a one-size-fits-all, you're suspended, you're out on the street, you're going to end up running drugs. How do you feel about restorative justice?
I think that that's a process that works, mm-hmm. but I think it needs to go deeper than that. I think we concentrate too much on the symptoms of a problem rather than the problem itself. Restorative justice does help both individuals, but it doesn't get to, why did you do this in the first place? What caused you to have that attitude where you could hurt someone else? Why did you need to hurt someone else? Because generally, individuals hurt others because they're hurting themselves. And we don't find out how they're hurting. And once we do that, we can change all kinds of things. The recurrent drug use and the epidemic drug use that we have right now is because people are trying to self-medicate for the emotional pain that they're feeling. We're not addressing that. We're just simply opening more methadone clinics. That's insane to me.
Now, we're talking to Lori Thomas. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back and dive into the issues. If she is elected mayor of Rochester, what are her priorities? Well, she has a detailed plan that you can find more of, and Thomas for Mayor, that's the number four, thomasformayor.wordpress.com. We'll work through that. We'll talk about how she sees not only the current administration, but what she thinks ought to change next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, Congressman John Katko joins us in studio. The Republican represents the 24th Congressional District that stretches from Syracuse through Wayne County. We'll talk about foreign policy, one of his specialties and a focus area for him, but also domestic politics, the failure of the AHCA, and what comes next for health care. What about job creation and poverty and more? Congressman Katko next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Maybe you're wondering, wait, what party is Lori Thomas? Is she a Green? I think you've been a Green in the past, haven't you?
I was endorsed by the Green Party.
You were endorsed by the Green Party,
yes.
In a previous run for
School board. Yes.
But you don't consider yourself a Green?
No.
Or a Democrat?
No.
Or a Republican?
No.
And so why not? What's the issue that you have with parties?
I've always had an issue with parties. This the Constitution, the forefathers, they didn't believe in party politics. One of the things that they wanted to get rid of was party politics. For the same reason that we're seeing, because when you have people belonging to a party, they can be easily cajoled and purchased. And that's what's happening in our country. That's what has been happening in our country.
All right. So priority one for you, if you're elected as mayor.
When?
When you're elected as mayor, priority one is what?
Priority one is opening up communication between the city, the state, the county. We have to have not one party controlling one aspect of our country and one party controlling another and one party controlling another. We have to come together and say what's best for the people, okay? Not what's best for the corporations, not what's best for the politicians or the party, but what's best for the people. And that's what I'm running on.
But again, the implication then is that the current leadership doesn't really communicate on that level with across government lines to different agencies on behalf of the people. You feel that way?
I know that that's the truth. I mean, when you call in for services, you have to either talk to one party or another party, and neither hand knows what the other hand is doing. And that to me doesn't seem very effective or efficient. When we can work together as one government of the people, we can begin to work for the people. And it's not Monroe County Social Services. It should be the social services that we deal with the people.
Okay. So before I get to your six-point plan, just as one example, I do want to follow up in one way on that, because you say you can call an agency or somebody in government, and they don't know what, you know, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing. When it comes to the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative, that problem has been identified for a couple of years now, and that's something that they say that they are trying to fix, that they are working for the first time to really cross those boundaries, make sure that there's much more effective communication, much more effective program work. Do you see it happening? How do you feel about RMAPI?
Well, why, as you just said, we've seen this for years. We've heard the same rhetoric for years. And I've just belonged to so many different groups. To be perfectly honest, I'm just tired of going to meetings and then have no action come of it. Everybody knows what the problem is. Everyone comes together and talks about what the problem is. But there has been no action on actually solving the problem. And the solutions to the problems are fairly simple. It doesn't take rocket science to know that in order for people to come out of poverty, they have to take responsibility for being a citizen. And the best way to get someone to take responsibility for being a citizen is home ownership. When you own your own home, you care about your neighborhood. When you're renting, you don't care. You just move into a place and you move out. So how do we increase care in our city? You increase home ownership in our city. How do you do that with the county? Well, you say these people who are in social services that want to move out of poverty, let's create a way for them to own their own homes instead of just renting someone else's property.
Part of this effort when it comes to homes, well, is phase one, tiny homes.
Yes.
So tell me about tiny homes.
Tiny homes is a project, as I mentioned on Need to Know. Both my sons are veterans, but one of my sons suffers from PTSD. And a few years back, my mom and my sister and I went to Alaska, and we saw these really sweet, cute little tiny homes. And then there happens to be an XXI show about tiny homes.
We talked about it. I think roughly 400 square feet, something like
yes,
that. Small,
And my son was saying, geez, I'd like to live in something like that. And one of the things about post-traumatic stress syndrome is you don't want wide open areas because you don't trust them. The more enclosed space my son is in, the better he feels. He's not as scared. I don't know if scared's the word, but he's more trusting in a
smaller space.
Feels
like he can control his surroundings,
yes,
right?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So I, with my son, we talked about a tiny homes project called Military Greens, where we would help veterans build these tiny homes and then place greenhouses on the lot where they can grow their own vegetables or in a co-op, grow vegetables to sell at the public market or to sell to Tops and Wegmans and then become self-sufficient. And in that, they would also help to protect their neighborhoods.
All right, so that's phase one, the Tiny Homes Military Greens Project. And phase two kind of ties right with it. Families working with, as she said earlier, Habitat for Humanity to build homes on vacant lots. You say that would increase the tax base. And then you can talk a little bit about, if you could, community gardens and city hives.
Yes, community gardens. One of the ways we can help people pay for their homes and their mortgage, again, is for them to become curators of community gardens. Grow vegetables for the neighborhood, grow vegetables for public market, and be self-sustaining in that way. Also, City Hives is a project I was speaking with, I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the organization, but they're bee growers in New York State. And because the bee population now has been so depleted and bees are now considered an endangered species, the federal government has quite a few grants and programs for the proliferation of bees. Well, we can use some of our empty lots as beehive to grow bees, to lease out to farmers. There was actually a bee plight this year. Okay, so farmers are going to need more bees to collect honey and sell honey, and that way become self-sufficient.
Phase three, you want to create a theater center in downtown Rochester that incorporates and supports the RBTL, Blackfriars, Jiva, and new venues along Main Street from Culver Road to Jefferson Avenue. Now, don't know if you've seen, but this Parcel 5 thing is kind of a big deal.
Yes, it is.
And they've Mayor Warren has decided she wants RBTL to have their Performing Arts Center right there on Parcel 5. You think that was a good decision?
I think it's a good decision, but not the way it's being rolled out.
Why is that?
The only problem I have with that is the apartments that are going to be in there. I don't really believe that we should have people living right there on Main Street. I'd like to see Main Street more of like a Times Square, New York City kind of situation. Not as big, of course, but just to bring people in to Rochester. We have hotels there that will support tourism, but to have living space in that area, I don't think is a good thing, because that, again, once people move out and the structures are empty, we have quite a few living spaces downtown Rochester already and that are not fully, that are vacant, let me say it that way. Why not just put people in those places instead of creating more spaces where people don't want to live?
Okay, and so what else would you do then to create sort of this theater, kind of sounds like a theater district and this approach that you would have?
A commercial district.
Okay.
I just don't understand why we're tearing down these structures instead of building them up. We don't have, I believe it's the Neisner structure that has been empty for so long. McCrory's used to be there. Why is that still empty? Why can't we, and this is one of the things I would work on as a mayor, to work with those, the owners of that property and say, hey, look, this has been vacant too long. We're either doing something with it or the city's taking it back and we're going to do something with it. And what I'd like to see go in there is a mini mall where people can, instead of having Rochester citizens take the busway out to Irondequoit Mall, or, well, that doesn't exist anymore, but Marketplace Mall or Eastview Mall, but to have that right in the city. We can do that. The reason these things were taken out of the city was because they said, oh, there was a high crime area. Well, let's reduce the crime and bring those things back.
Okay. Phase 4. This is interesting. You got a lot of detail to share with what you would do with this. You want to rehabilitate the old Psych Center on Elmwood Avenue into a rent-controlled senior living community.
Yes, a senior living co-op.
Yes, okay.
That is controlled by the seniors that live there. I don't think that we give any justice to our senior community. We're charging them high rent. We're creating what's called these luxury apartments and charging them a high rent when they can have this beautiful structure. I love architecture, and I think this is really a beautiful structure that is going to waste here. It's 17 floors. It overlooks Highland Park, which is absolutely gorgeous in the summertime. It's near Strong Memorial Hospital. It just has so many advantages that our seniors can take advantage of that I don't understand why they want to destroy it instead of rehabilitate it.
You'd want to partner with RTS to provide buses to seniors for shopping and recreation?
Oh, yes. Our seniors are very active. They like going to the track. They like going to the casinos. There's plenty of space there for RTS to just line those buses up and to have them jump on and go wherever it is they'd like to go. There's space there for barbershops, beauty shops, stores, markets. There's just tons of space there for that to be a senior living experience.
All right, let me push you for a little more detail then on how you're going to get this done then, because you told our colleague Helen B. and Duty Hofer perhaps this could be funded through state and federal programs, also through the co-op itself, that seniors could lease spaces to barbershops, daycare, even Wegmans.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go to the first part. State and federal programs. You think there could be state and federal money for this?
Absolutely. I think that we can advocate for all of those things. There's tons of money out there that are being collected in taxes. And we as a society aren't paying attention to where our tax dollars are going. And I think that we need to open our eyes and see that we have the power to say where we want our tax dollars to go. And we need our tax dollars to fund more people projects instead of corporate projects.
Do you think that that is overly optimistic, or do you think as mayor you could be a voice that says, look, this is a priority, I know how to get that money?
As mayor, I will. Absolutely. I don't believe that anything is impossible. I know things are very difficult, but when you believe in what you're doing, you can get them done. It's as simple as that to me. And it and I'm not trying to make it sound that simplistic pie in the sky kind of thing. I'm willing to work hard enough to get it done.
All right, talking to Lori Thomas, who's running for mayor in phase 5 of her plan. Create 4 major emergency centers within the 4 quadrants of the city that will house an emergency call center, police, fire, and emergency response teams. Why do that?
To keep our city safe and to keep our citizens feeling safe within our city. To keep businesses that come into the city safe. Right now, the emergency response is a very disjointed system. I have called 911 and waited to see what the response time is. The response time is very different in very different neighborhoods in Rochester.
You've called them just to test them?
No.
I just want to make sure.
No. Once again, I live in a neighborhood where there's a lot of activity.
Okay.
Whenever I see a child on the street, in the street, with no adult supervision, I call 911. I don't like seeing that. I had 2 children. I know how quick they were when they were 2 and 3 years old.
But hold on. How old here? Because I've got a 5-year-old. If he hangs out, I don't think he's... I'm trying to figure out, are you calling 911 when you see any kid of any age in the street?
No.
You're talking how young?
I'm talking...
Like toddlers?
Toddlers.
Okay.
At one instance, there was a toddler, he couldn't have been more than 2 years old, running down the middle of Hayward Avenue. Hayward Avenue is a very busy street. People just run up and down there, buses and trucks. He would never have been seen. So no, I'm not talking about 10, 11 years old riding their bikes in the street and things like that. But I am talking about toddlers up to the age of maybe 4 or 5 years old running in the street without adult supervision.
Right. And again, the emergency response that you've witnessed is?
Probably 5 to 10 minutes. 5 to 10 minutes. I've called because I've seen gang fights in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. The response time was maybe 10 to 15 minutes. And then when I call back again. Every minute and a half, I will call back, and they will say, well, our officers are busy doing something else. But there's a gang fight right outside my house. Well, do you see any weapons? And the question that really unnerves me is, what color are they?
They ask you that?
Yes. And I'm like, what difference does that make? These are children fighting. Yes, well, are they African American? Are they Hispanic? What difference does it make? Hmm. They're children fighting.
Before I move to phase 6, since we're talking about public safety, and I've talked to the other mayoral candidates about this very question, I think it's instructive to get this question answered so we can kind of let listeners understand how you view sort of the state of things, because there's a lot of talk about police-community relations. Do you think people of color are treated differently by law enforcement in this country and in this city?
I know they are. That's not a thought. That's not a perspective. That's a reality. And it's purposeful.
Purposeful.
It's purposeful. When you see a group of people that are considered subgroups, and this is through education, anyone who is not a middle-income white male in education is considered a subgroup. That's unconscionable to me, first of all. Second of all, when you see a group of people that are unduly targeted for certain situations, that's unconscionable to me.
Like what, specifically?
Take any recent event. Individuals that are thought to be committing a crime. And this isn't just happening. I mean, I've had cousins, male members of my family, stopped by the police just because they looked like they were doing something wrong. The police actually targeted me when I was collecting garbage. I was coming home one night. I think it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. I went into my home. They broke into my home after me and shoved me up against the wall. And my mom came down. She says, what are you doing to my daughter? And the police officer said, daughter. And he looked and I said, yes, because I was in my refuse uniform. And I said, yes, I'm a female. Oh, well, you look like someone we were after. So these things aren't in my head. These things are a reality. Okay, and things like that have happened more than once to me and to other members in my family.
Do you think the current administration and the current police department are responding to that issue appropriately?
No, not at all. To give someone a paid leave for a violent offense against another is just saying go on vacation for a while until this all goes away. And that's not right.
But don't they have to investigate to make sure the allegations
Absolutely.
Are right?
Yeah. But do we have to pay those officers while they're investigating? That's my question. Okay? As long as we're paying those officers, what has created a deterrent to that action? What has created a deterrent to that mindset? Okay? There is none. Okay? These officers are simply placed on. And I speak of my own experience as a teacher. Okay. One of the things I rejected to was the fact that they suspended me for washing a child's mouth out with soap, but I was suspended with pay. So what is the deterrent to me to not do that action again? If I'm simply, and I was told, well, we're just waiting for the situation to calm down before we address it. I was angry about that because these are tax dollars that are being gone. And when I was put in the rubber room, I was put in the rubber room four times, by the way. And each time there were 20, 30 individuals in that rubber room getting paid for doing absolutely nothing. These are our tax dollars that are being wasted yearly.
So before I get to the last phase of your plan, what is one example of something that you think you could do to change this dynamic? We've had Mayor Warren, James Shepard, Rachel Barnhart on this program, Alex White, talking about how they view police community relations and what they could do to provide the kind of leadership. They've tangled over whether their response last summer in July to the demonstration related to Black Lives Matter was appropriate on the behalf of the mayor. They've tangled about other things. What's something that you could do that you think would change the dynamic if you're the mayor?
Well, one of the things that I will do is create a new attitude within the police department that says you are not above the law and we're not going to shelter you and make you give you the opportunity to believe you're above the law. Each day we see police officers that break the law. They put on their sirens to get through red lights, that type of thing. We have to stop that. The police officers are here to protect and serve the public. They're not here to intimidate the public.
I think Chief Simonelli would probably say that he doesn't view his officers as above the law, and he doesn't think they do either.
He could say that, absolutely, but that's not the truth.
Talking to Lori Thomas, phase six of her plan, promote excellent neighborhood schools that attract students from a 1 to 1.5 mile overlapping radius with busing for field trips and the youngest students. Tell me more specifically how you're going to do this and what you mean by it and what you think the result would be.
Once again, creating home ownership, growing neighborhoods. One of the biggest problems we have is this whole school choice thing. Well, if 83% of our schools are failing, what choice do we have? There is none. You either send your child to a failing school in your neighborhood or to a failing school outside of your neighborhood. Busing, and I was told this by a school board member, and I'm not going to say who, busing was initiated through school choice because people need their children out of the house so they can get to work. Now, to put a young child, and I don't know if you're familiar with the buses in Rochester, but these young children get on the bus 6:30 in the morning. The buses are hot. I don't know why they're kept so hot, but they're hot. We get the children to school and we feed them a sugar-filled breakfast, and then we ask them to learn. It's not going to happen, okay? Their bodies are already shut down because of the heat of the ride in the bus, and then the sugar, the metabolism, shuts down because it's trying to metabolize the food that they were just given. Right? We have to rethink what we're doing to our children. We have to rethink what our school system is doing to our children. We're not looking at it from a human perspective. And that's what I want to bring to the office of mayor, a human perspective, not a money perspective, but a human perspective.
Should school start later?
Schools should start later for our younger population. Earlier for our older population. We want our secondary students to be able to get out of school so that they can get those jobs after school. We want our younger population elementary students to start later in the day so that they're already awake and ready to learn.
All right, a couple of listener questions. Joel wants to know, what power does the mayor have to affect school policy in Rochester?
The power to affect school policy will come from the people. Once we grow home ownership in Rochester, we can come out from underneath that Big Five control. Right now, Rochester is controlled by that big five state policy. We don't have any control.
Biggest five cities funded by, well, we're talking about New York State.
We're talking about Buffalo, Albany, Syracuse.
Rochester.
Rochester and
New York City. Or New York City separate from that?
No, New York City is separate from that. There's one other. It might be Schenectady.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
All right, so the big five.
But anyway, the big five, they're supposed to be the poorest cities in New York City, in New York State, excuse me.
But when you say kind of under the thumb, what do you mean by that?
That means that in order to get funding from the state, we have to go along with the program, so to speak. Okay? We have a paid school board. Suburban schools don't have, suburban districts, excuse me, don't have a paid school board. They have an elected school board. We have no control over our budget, so whatever the city school district does and approves, it's done. We have no say in that. We can go to meeting after meeting, and whatever they say will happen. When they came out with the line budget, line item budget during Superintendent Brazard's administration, I went through that budget line by line and found several discrepancies that I brought to the district. And I just received a letter in the mail saying the school district budget is correct. Well, now all of a sudden we're hearing from the state auditor that the school district budget is not necessarily correct at all.
Okay, well, let me go ahead and get one more listener questions in. This comes from Little Flower on Twitter, who says, would Lori Thomas support a community land trust with the rent-to-own option as one way to increase home ownership?
That is an idea that I would certainly take into suggestion. I'd like to talk more with that individual about that.
Okay. Now, when it comes to poverty, generally speaking, one thing we hear a lot about is transportation. How do you view transportation in this city? You know, as mayor, would you seek to change any of the existing plans to, you know, whether it's adding more bike lanes, or I think we're sort of slowly diversifying transportation in this city. Would you want to change anything?
That's not a primary concern for right now. I think we're doing pretty good with public transportation. I'd like to see more people taking advantage of public transportation. There are too many cars on the road with only one person in them. Once again, not a major concern right now, but it is something that I do know needs to be addressed.
Okay, another listener wants to know, how would she subsidize home buyers when we already have tremendous poverty?
One of the things that I have a real problem with is Monroe County Department of Social Services providing individuals with rent when mortgages are like one-third the cost. I'd like to see a situation, which is why I want to open up communications with the county, with the state, with even the federal government, to create a situation where instead of paying mortgages, people can neighborhood choice. I want to have a home in this neighborhood. Okay, for 5 years, we will support your mortgage payments in this neighborhood for your home. After that, once you're working and you're on your feet, you can take over those payments. But it would be less of a tax burden for us to pay the mortgage on a house than to pay the rent on a property. That would encourage home ownership.
Are you worried after those 5 years, you would see a lot of people essentially take the five-year deal and then be gone and vacate those places?
What would be the purpose of that? We wouldn't give them rent for another home. We wouldn't give them rent for another for another apartment. It's their home. They live there. I think that we believe that people don't want to be righteous.
Or don't want to work, right?
Or don't want to work without giving them the opportunity to be righteous. Okay, when I say righteous, I don't mean in the religious sense.
No, I
mean just doing the right thing. And people aren't given the opportunity to do the right thing. They're given more of the opportunity to play the system than to make the system work for them.
Yeah. In other words, it sounds like you think the stereotype of, well, people in poverty are, choose whatever term, lazy or want to be in poverty. Unfortunately, you hear that and you think that that's almost entirely untrue, right?
It's untrue for most individuals. Most individuals are trapped in poverty because they're not given any viable options to get out of it. When we train them for a job, they get a minimum wage job that doesn't support the daycare that they need to keep the job. It's just ridiculous what we do in that system of social services when we're not serving our social people, our community.
All right, 20 seconds. I hate this kind of question because I bring you on no matter who you are. If you're running for an office, I don't think we should be play the, well, can you win, can you not game. Did you think about running for other offices like council, et cetera? You went straight for mayor.
No, I did school board.
Okay, yeah.
And as a matter of fact, I ran 1 year and got more votes than individuals who had run for several years in a row.
But now you say you're running, you're going to win.
I'm going to win. I'm going to be the mayor because that's the best thing for this city.
Lori Thomas is running for mayor, and you can find her online, thomas4mayor, that's the number four, thomas4mayor.wordpress.com. Will you come back before the election?
Absolutely. Whenever you want me to.
Thank you so much for being here. It's been really great having you. And it's always great to explore in-depth the views of the candidates. So thank you, Lori.
Thank you very much.
All right. Much more Connections. Congressman John Katko joins us next hour on Connections.